Welcome to Hype episode 167. My name is Selena and I'm joined for another exciting show by Pam. Hello, Pam.
Hello.
Welcome, welcome everyone to another year at Ilvermorny. I don't know.
I thought you were going Effie Trinket Hunger Games and I was like, this is dark.
No, Selena.
I was going
Dumbledore.
I see.
I can understand. I mean, both of them are fabulous and like the color purple. So I guess, you know, it works out. We have such an exciting week of news stories to talk about today with you, and we hope that you appreciate what we have to talk about. Our topics include Fantastic Beasts 2, a title here. We have some Star Wars news, more Lord of the Rings news. This is just going to be a recurring theme if I have anything to say about it. We have some TV show news and TV shows of the week. Feedback as always, and we hope that you enjoy. If you want to get in touch with us about anything we talk about today or suggest any topics for the future, you can email us hype@hypeable.com. You can find us on Twitter @hypeablehype. You can find us on Instagram @hypeablehype. I might post a picture on there of the Demogorgon that appeared in my painting tonight. It was terrifying and I'm still a little bit afraid. And you can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. We also have, of course, a Patreon, which is where if you want to contribute to the continued existence of the show and the possibility for us to take the show further and to do more things with it, then you can consider becoming a Patreon subscriber. We recently overhauled the Patreon system, so it is now a $2 set rate every month. And if you subscribe at the $2 level, you get 2 videos every month, one from me and one from Pam. I just posted mine yesterday. You get a bonus segment every show. You get access to when we do contests and if we do like extra stuff, like when we have our Merlin rewatch coming up, we're planning to do some stuff with that and lots more fun things. So head on over to Patreon, which is patreon.com/hypepodcast, and consider subscribing if you have the chance at all, and otherwise just continue to enjoy the regular show. We should also mention that this week's patron bonus discussion will be a more in-depth look at the new material from Fantastic Beasts, more discussion on the title and the plot synopsis and the picture released and all that kind of stuff. So if you are interested in more Fantastic Beasts news, then go over to Patreon and check out the bonus segment, which should be up a few days after this recording has been released. So keep an eye out and we'll let you know on Twitter. All right, so we're going to start as always with How We Hype, where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom this past week. And we actually were both music themed this week, but let's start with your movie review and then we'll head on into the music stuff.
Yeah, very quickly, I just wanted to mention that I went to see Murder on the Orient Express earlier this week. I have not ever read an Agatha Christie novel. I'm not very familiar with the work that inspired this movie. So my review might not be the one you should go off of. You should definitely not go off of my review if you're a big fan of this book, because I know that Marima has spoken about this in the past, and a lot of Christie fans were a little bit hesitant about this movie after the big trailer was released a few months ago. But as a non-Christie reader, I will say that I feel like this movie was like such a good time at the theater. The pacing was really, really great. I really enjoyed the use of the space because, of course, a lot of it takes place on this train. So there's, you know, they have to make do with the space that they have. It's very confined quarters. And I really enjoyed just the cinematography and the story and the acting. And if you're not into Johnny Depp, don't worry, because he's not the main focal point of the film, really. So there you go.
Unfortunately, we cannot say that about every film we're going to talk about
today. Right.
But I'm glad you enjoyed it. That's really good. It looks like a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to jump in here quickly now for my music recommendation, and then you can do yours. So I posted about this on Hypeable too, and I wanted to bring it up here on Hype because I really think that it is worth everyone's attention. So the 100-star Christopher Larkin, who plays Monty, has released a solo album titled The Happiest Album Ever Made, and I have to confess that I was not very aware of Chris Larkin's music. Obviously, I know him in the context of The 100, and if you listen to Hype, you know that I'm notorious for not knowing a lot about actors. So I knew he made music, but I didn't realize that he was a musician to the level that he is. So I listened to the happiest album ever made, and I was so stunned by how good it was. And this is not meant to sound like, oh, I can't believe that he's good, but you know, you have no idea what to expect when you listen to someone's music, obviously. And I think it just, this album, like he has confessed to being inspired by Sufjan Stevens, among others, and you can definitely tell that's really strong on this album, and that's the kind of music that I really enjoy. It's very slow, it's very somber. The lyrics are very, very clever, and he wrote the lyrics and he sings on this album as well. And the guitar work is really beautiful, and it's exactly the kind of album that I would listen to without knowing who had made it. So just knowing that he's obviously familiar to me through the 100 context, and then he is also a musician who makes the kind of music that I think is one of my favorite types of music. It's just wonderful, and if I sound really ineloquent right now, it's because, as I confessed to Pam before the show started, I'm really sort of, it's hard for me to talk about music because I don't really have the terminology for it, and I think it's sometimes hard, especially with music, to express how it makes you feel with words without sounding really cheesy or like really sort of cliche or dumb. So I try to avoid it, but I couldn't avoid it for this one, because I feel like I had to somehow help spread the word about this. And there are fantastic albums. It's a very cohesive listening experience. The tracks are very separate, but they fit together extremely well. And one of my favorite tracks in the album is Julian, for which there was also this was the first single released off the album. And then the songs called Crooked Knife and Middle Game were just some of the tracks that I sort of, right after listening to it all the way through, I immediately went back and re-listened to those. And really, I honestly, there's not a weak track on this album, and I think it's like, just kind of set aside the fact that, oh, it's the guy from The 100, and just consider him like a musician who has released his sophomore album, and I think you will be extremely surprised, in a good way, extremely happy with the album that you're about to listen to. So that was very incoherent, but I hope I somehow managed to do it a little bit of justice. It's made its way straight onto my writing playlist, because it's the perfect fit for something like that. So if you're doing NaNoWriMo right now and you're halfway through and you're panicking about your word count, then maybe consider putting on this The Happiest Album Ever Made. And he releases it under the artist name Carrie Hatchett. And there's a link to it on Hypeable as well.
I'm really excited to listen to this later, because I'm a really big fan of Sufjan Stevens, and I'm curious.
Sufjan Stevens. Yeah. And see, I can't even say the artist names right.
I'm pretty sure that's what you said.
No, I said Sufjan.
Oh, did you?
Because that's what I thought it was.
It's okay. It's Sufjan Stevens, and right. Yeah, and I'm excited to see like what he pulls from in terms of Sufjan's repertoire, because he, as I know you know, because you've listened to his stuff, he really like reinvents himself a lot through the course of his music. So I'm excited. I'm going to put it on my list, going right up to the top.
Yes. Awesome.
Well, I have a plug for another small little artist that nobody's heard of. Just kidding. Yes. Taylor Swift, you guys, finally released her big sixth studio album, Reputation. It dropped on November 10th. We've all had about a week to kind of experience this, listen to it. If you're like me, you've listened to it like a few times and you've gone through like a big, I don't know how to explain it. I think the first time I listened to this album, honestly, like I do this thing where I have to listen to the album from start to finish because I want to get into the headspace of the person. And ready for it, we had already heard. Endgame was kind of like out of left field. This was kind of like her big, like this is definitely going to be some kind of single at some point. She collabed with the rapper Future and of course with her BFF Ed Sheeran for this album. But it wasn't until we got to tracks 3 and 4 that I really kind of sat up in my chair and like moved a little bit closer. I was like, all right, Taylor, like let's see what you got. I think that that for me is like when the album started to really pick up. And I think that it's really easy to write off Taylor Swift's new album if you're just listening to the 4 songs that she released before this album came out, which of course were Ready For It, Look What You Made Me Do, Gorgeous, and Call It What You Want. Specifically, Look What You Made Me Do got a lot of traction because it's so extra and out there, and so is the music video, and everyone's like, oh my God, like Taylor's coming for everybody, and she's got a hit list, and this and that, this album's gonna be so extra. Like, this album is really not extra. And my favorite thing about it, honestly, is those songs aside, which kind of exist on this different kind of trajectory, what she managed to do with this album is be like incredibly personal as a storyteller and as a songwriter. And like, obviously she's written about her relationships and her love life and her feelings before. That's nothing new. But it was really interesting because like when you really start to listen to the lyrics of some of these songs, you realize that for the first time, it's not like she's in this situation and things are happening to her. I feel like a lot of her backlog now feels like that. In a lot of these tracks, she's like an equal part participant in what's going on. So she's like an active participant. She's not just like watching the pieces move around her and like reacting to those. She's like participating in the situations and helping move the story along. And it makes for a really personal experience. I think that my favorite tracks are some of the slower ballads right now. So I really like Delicate, Getaway Car. Dress is maybe my favorite song off the album. I'm not sure yet. And I really like Call It What You Want. I actually didn't like this song when it first came out. I thought it was kind of like whatever. But if you are like me and you kind of felt like it wasn't really your speed, I would recommend checking out the live version that she performed on SNL, because there's something that happens when she strips some of these tracks back, or what I assume is going to happen when she strips some of these tracks back is that you're really going to hear some of what she's actually trying to say. She's got this like great line in Call It What You Want too that I didn't pick up until like the third time I'd listened to the song when it first came out, where she says, all my roses grew back as thorns. And there's it, like, that's my favorite thing about Taylor Swift, is like she has like these little bright moments in her songwriting that really kind of hit you in the chest, and they paint this amazing picture. And so, yeah, so I would recommend just kind of like, if you feel like the sound is not for you, maybe just like looking up some of the lyrics, because I think that that's where she really shines as a musician. And then one last track I wanted to bring up was track number 4 called Don't Blame Me, because I feel like as a full piece of music, the production value on that track specifically was like the most impressive on the whole album. And unlike anything she had ever done before, it's just like, it's just beautiful. The song is beautiful. She does this thing with like a gospel choir towards the end that really, really fits with the whole track. And yeah, it's really great. So all things considered, now that I've kind of like given my Taylor spiel, probably not my favorite Taylor Swift album, but I feel like it deserves a moment of your time if you thought maybe like it wasn't going to be for you. So whenever it heads out to Spotify, Apple Music, things like that, if you're not looking to pay for it because you're not sure you're going to like it, I would recommend checking it out because it's worth a listen.
I feel so bad. I was planning to listen to it. I just didn't. I would have loved to participate. I'll try to listen to it for next week and we'll see. Anyway, we have to move on to the news because we have a lot to get through. So the first story...
Oh, man.
If we have to.
I feel like we've been teasing this all episode and we haven't even been recording that long. Fantastic Beasts 2 has officially given us our first little glimpse as to what we can expect from the sequel, which comes out in about a year now. Comes out next
exactly
November.
Year, yeah.
So yeah, exactly 1 year to go. And so as part of this sneak peek, we got this fun little cast portrait featuring everybody from Newt and Queenie and Jacob and Tina to Dumbledore, or Youngledore, as people have been calling him. Ezra Miller's also in this too. Credence, there was like a big debate over whether he would be back, and he is. And of course, we have on the complete opposite side of Dumbledore, because they want to make sure that we're very well aware that they're on opposite sides here. We have Johnny Depp as Grindelwald, which is still a source of much debate amongst the fandom.
Grindel who?
Grindel who? That's not all we got. We also got a title that I confess to Selena. I thought this was a joke because I saw another I saw another Twitter moment before I actually saw the news, and I thought that somebody had made this as like a reference to the allegations against Johnny Depp earlier, because the official title for Fantastic Beasts 2 is Fantastic Beasts: The Crimes of Grindelwald. We got fancy title card for this as well. Looks very similar to what we've come to expect from the Harry Potter movies. So very like metallic. It's actually pretty shiny. I thought that they would go a little bit darker and a little bit more tarnished, considering that, you know, that tends to be like the theme of Harry Potter movies. It's like you start off bright and shiny and then you get dark and tarnished. And then before not, you can't really see through the fog anymore because it's so dark.
I think it's tarnished already. Sorry, too dark.
I like it. But yeah, I mean, like, overall, I think the cast looks really great. I forgot to mention, Claudia Kim is playing, I can't ever pronounce this name, Malekdis?
I don't know who this is.
She is a carrier of a blood curse that destines her ultimately to transform into a beast. Sounds a lot like Freya on Merlin.
Yeah. Oh
no,
my God.
No spoilers, but
But spoilers.
So yeah, so that's kind of fun to see like a new face amongst the cast that we've already been introduced to. We also get our first look at Leta Lestrange, who is played by Zoe Kravitz, and her brother.
Her fiance.
I'm sorry, Newt's her fiance. Brother. That's right. Newt's brother. Yeah. That's a big twist.
It's not Game of Thrones, fam.
No. My bad. The last thing we got here, there's a little bit more to unpack here than I thought they were going to give us for like our first look. I don't know if you felt that way as well, but they also gave us a plot synopsis for the upcoming movie. So we're just going to run through this real quick. So this is what they had to say about that. At the end of the first film, the powerful dark wizard Gellert Grindelwald was captured by Makuza with the help of Newt Scamander, but making good on his threat, Grindelwald escaped custody and has set about gathering followers, most unsuspecting of his true agenda, to raise pureblood wizards up to rule over all non-magical beings. In an effort to thwart Grindelwald's plans, Albus Dumbledore enlists his former student Newt Scamander, who agrees to help, unaware of the dangers that lie ahead. Lines are drawn and love and loyalty are tested, even among the truest friends and family, in an increasingly divided wizarding world. So it sounds like tensions are going to be running high.
It does in.
What do you have to say about all? There's so much to unpack here, honestly. So it's probably good we're gonna move this over to a better forum to discuss. But what are like your initial thoughts? Like what about this makes you excited? What about this worries you? What about this do you not care about?
Well, I think, you know, honestly, it's the fact that Dumbledore and Grindelwald are on two opposite sides of the poster is kind of a perfect representation of how I feel and how torn I am about this. Because it's no secret, I am really excited for Dumbledore. And Jude Law as Dumbledore is so beyond perfect in terms of what I imagined. And if this title, if they'd taken my suggestion and called it To Be Fantastic, The Dumbledore Story, then I would have been a lot more happy.
That sounds like the musical version of this movie. To Be Fantastic,
which will inevitably happen. But, you know, I want the Dumbledore story, and I want the Dumbledore Newt story, and I want the Jacob and Queenie and Tina and Leta and all of that. And it's such a shame that Grindelwald and Johnny Depp as Grindelwald has tarnished this as much as it has. It's a shame for the fans. It's not a shame for them, because they could have just not cast him. And I think we are in a really tough sort of situation, not only talking about it and reporting about it, but Warner Brothers must be as well, because, and this is another thing we talked about before the show, that we're going to have a bonus discussion at some point, diving deeper into this, what's been going on in Hollywood right now is sort of the Weinstein effect, and how it's cleaning up a lot of sort of people in Hollywood that have abuse their positions of power, and they're sort of seeing repercussions of that finally. And someone who's not seeing any repercussions is Johnny Depp. And it's tough. It's tough to talk about. And it's tough to engage with, because we know they're not going to recast him. Like, we would love for them to recast him, but and maybe they will. Maybe not. All hope is not lost. But just, I think seeing him, and in his stupid outfit, like, it's not to undermine, like, the genuine concerns about Johnny Depp the person, but the way that they've styled Grindelwald, the way that he was acting in the first movie, everything about him, knowing how good Colin Farrell was in the role, and just seeing Johnny Depp even for those, like, brief seconds, and knowing how hokey it was going to be, and then seeing him in this poster, and just, I'm just not about it. And I kind of, it makes me sad, because I'm so excited for the Dumbledore thing, but the Dumbledore thing ties so closely into the Grindelwald thing that it's kind of ruining it, you know? Like, even the good parts of this are being tarnished by this dumb casting choice and styling of the character once cast. So I think I'm extremely torn, and I'm feeling both sad and disappointed and frustrated, but also excited. And I don't really know how to corroborate those two feelings inside of myself. How do you feel?
Yeah, I think it's really hard, because I was looking at some of the feedback the fans had, and you know, and I really feel like, unfortunately, it's dividing the fandom, and we don't need more division. Like, I feel like we got enough of it with Cursed Child. So it's really unfortunate that there continues to be things that kind of is like weighing down and putting people on one side or on another side. And a lot of people that are really uncomfortable with the idea make a really good point, which is that, you know, like, Harry Potter is supposed to be like this escape. And some people, unfortunately, have very dark pasts, and they've had to deal with people that have also been like very abusive. And then so to see somebody that has, you know, been accused of doing something similar is just, it must be hard for them. And I can't even imagine what that must be like. And it's hard to separate, I think. And yeah, especially too with, like, I mean, like, you just saw Ridley Scott take a huge step along with Sony Pictures to remove Kevin Spacey from his movie that's already been finished. Granted, he probably doesn't have a bigger part. He doesn't have as big of a part as I'm sure Johnny Depp does, who's been filming Fantastic Beasts 2 for a while. But they are moving forward with removing Kevin Spacey from the film and reshooting with Christopher Plummer, you know?
Right.
So
they should do the same here.
Right. So people see things like that, and then they go, well, how is this not possible? Like, Warner Brothers is also a big studio. They have the money. They've heard people's feelings towards it, and they haven't really done anything. And it really kind of diminishes, like, what we decide.
And the silence is tough, too.
Yeah. I think the problem is, and this is maybe a discussion for, like, Selena alluded to, like, another time, is that it diminishes what we deem is punishable in a time where people are saying not anymore, never again, you know. But then hear somebody that is in a very similar situation, and he's walking free, basically. It's like, yeah. I understand why people have a problem with it,
and I think we should be talking about it. I think Hypebeast's strategy is very good. Like, we have implemented, as you might have seen if you go on Hypebeast, we've implemented this thing where at the bottom of the articles where we talk about fandom products where a person who has been accused of assault and harassment is being, like, we make a point to mention it, you know. We don't let it sort of necessarily color our reporting too much when we talk about the fandoms, but we do sort of, we don't want it to go away. I think it's fair that regardless of how people feel about, like, his involvement in this film, and regardless of how they feel about the film, I don't think this is something that we should be happily ignoring. So it's good that we are bringing it up and keeping it in our minds. But at the same time, again, we use art to get away a little bit. We use art to take a break from the real world. And so I sort of, you can both understand the people that are saying, well, it's not possible for me to do that with Fantastic Beasts now. But you can also understand the people that say, look, I need, like, Fantastic Beasts is something that gives me comfort in my life, makes my day a little bit easier knowing that I have this to look forward to and can return to the Wizarding World. And that's okay too. I think that's okay too. I don't want to pass judgment on anyone for enjoying or being excited or looking forward to the Fantastic Beasts movies.
Yeah, of course. And I think that as a fandom going forward, I think we just need to be aware of that. That if, you know, if somebody is okay with it, that's their decision and we should respect that. And if somebody's not okay with it, we shouldn't be upset that they are not a fan of this decision, you know, because at the end of the day, it's a personal choice. I'll be curious to see. I know that like right after, like we didn't know obviously until like right before this movie came out that Johnny Depp had been cast as Grindelwald. We didn't even know we were going to see Grindelwald at the end of this movie. They kind of like kept that tight locked up until the very last moment. And there were a lot of talks amongst the fandom about like boycotting this film or like going to see the first one because we'd already all bought our tickets, but not going to see the second one. I don't think this movie is going to by any means perform terribly at the box office because at the end of the day, it's a Harry Potter entity. But I will be curious to see if the people that I specifically remember saying they were like not going to see movie two or they're not going to see anymore actually going to follow through with those threats, because it's kind of like, I don't want to like call people's bluffs. I would never do that. But it's just, it does like, I'm so curious about like how people's minds work because it's so hard to stay away when you want to be involved in the fan base.
Yeah, this is why I never say I'm going to boycott something.
Me too. It's like
because with, I like, never Game know how I'm going to feel.
I was like, no, I'm probably going to watch you guys. Like, sorry.
Yes. Yeah, and we will discuss, we will dive deeper into all of this and the other characters and stuff more in the bonus segment too. But I guess I will just say that if it had not been for Dumbledore and Jude Law, like I actually legitimately might not bother watching this. Not that I would boycott it, but I might actually not bother going to the cinema. But I am just so intrigued by Jude Law and Dumbledore, and I want it. And like, there's this picture going around on Twitter, and this is the last I'll say, just waiting around in it, but of Colin Farrell in Johnny Depp's place. And like, could you imagine Dumbledore and Colin Farrell, like boyfriends, enemies, you know, a beautiful, tragic love story, how close we were to. It seems like a little bit of a mockery in so many ways that this is Dumbledore's story and this is his sort of tragic romantic background and it's, you know, Johnny Depp in the role. Like, oh, it's so frustrating. But anyway, I'm still excited. I'm here for Dumbledore, basically. And Leta Lestrange, I guess. And Jacob.
Yeah. And also, like, one last thing. For those of you saying, oh, there's no way they could recast Johnny Depp. Look, it's the Wizarding World. Anything's possible. There are cloaking spells. There is Polyjuice Potion. Like, super easy fix. Super easy explanation. Maybe he's a secret metamorph of Magi. Like, we don't know.
Yes, exactly. He probably still has some of that hair of Colin Farrell. He can make it work. They could make it work if they wanted to. That's what's so frustrating. Anyway.
All right, so next November, we'll be there, for better or worse.
To beast continued.
To beast, oh, this is why we're friends. Yes,
it's because I make stupid jokes, thanks.
I appreciate them.
So we're gonna jump right into another galaxy here and talk about Star Wars, which, you know, we already learned that J.J. Abrams would be helming the final Star Wars movie in the current trilogy. But what we did not know until now is that there will be another trilogy, and it will be Rian Johnson, the director of the upcoming The Last Jedi, who will be helming this trilogy. He'll be creating this brand new, this trilogy, serving as writer and director on at least the first installment. So basically being the J.J. Abrams of this new trilogy is what they're saying. There's not a lot we know about it, except it will be separate from the episodic Skywalker saga, and will be introducing new characters from a corner of the galaxy that Star Wars lore has never before explored. So it is going to be a movie set in space under the Star Wars brand, is what I'm getting from this. You know what? I have to be honest, when I read this news story originally, I just felt tired. And I know, you know, you can never really predict how you're going to feel about this because I'm super into the current trilogy of movies. And, you know, when we had the Lord of the Rings news, I was like, oh, my God, bring it on. So by all accounts, I should be excited for this. But I feel like the current Star Wars trilogy is really giving me everything that I need from a Star Wars movie. I wasn't a big fan of Rogue One. I don't particularly see the appeal of a random new trilogy that has nothing to do with the main lore, you know, because again, it just kind of does seem like a movie set somewhere in the stars. And there will presumably be a war, and that's it. And but I do think one thing that I do think is good about this is that clearly Lucasfilm is very impressed with Rian Johnson's work, if they're entrusting him with this. So if nothing else, it tells us that the Last Jedi is going to be really good. I don't know how I don't know how I feel about this. Are you excited? Are you hopeful?
I'm not sure. I think this is something that's hard to be excited about when we don't have any details. I think it's really easy to say this wouldn't interest me right now, but there's every possibility that the trailer will come out and I'll be like, you know what, that sounds like a really interesting story. Because the thing about the Star Wars universe is before it got swept up by Disney and we got all of this new content coming forth, kind of like had this revitalization, the Star Wars universe was already kind of open. Like there are, if you're just like a big Star Wars fan and you want to read books within this, there's so many books in the Star Wars universe that have like nothing to do with our core group that we're introduced to in the world that Lucas brought us. So, mm-hmm. And I know that there are people that are really into that stuff.
Yeah.
So it's an easy way to bring it into the mainstream is to hire somebody to create another story that exists within this realm. But it's, yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. It's really going to be like a case-by-case basis for me after they're mm-hmm. finished playing around with the original characters and kind of like offshoots of the story that we already know. Because that's always what I've been a big fan of since I was a kid.
Yeah.
And even like Rogue One, I was interested in because it's still dealt with our Star Wars universe, you know? So,
yeah, I'm noticing, I guess if there is a trend in how I'm reacting to these stories, it's that I'm interested in sort of branching off and exploring stories and characters that I already know. So like the Lord of the Rings stuff, I'm interested in it because it seems like it will be at least related to the Lord of the Rings story that I know. This current Star Wars trilogy is interesting to me because it continues Luke and Leia and Han Solo's story, but also introduces new characters that I like. Fantastic Beasts, I'm only interested in Dumbledore because he's the only one I know. So I'm like, I think that that's what this is, just a movie with the same branding, but I have no attachment to it. And I have no like, maybe it will be good, but I have no basis for judging that. So I'm not like jumping up and down like, oh my God, Rian Johnson. Like I haven't even seen his movie. If I see it, I like it. Maybe I'll feel differently, but I have to reserve judgment, surely. I do also want to say, and this is something that I just find kind of hilarious, but I guess that sort of speaks to the same kind of selectiveness that I just displayed, is that I'm seeing a lot of the same people who were very frustrated with J.J. Abrams coming back to direct the last one, saying, oh no, you know, I want a different like director and they should have gotten a woman, blah, blah, blah. I see those same people being like super excited about this with Rian Johnson. And I'm like doing the math in my head. I'm like, well, your argument's kind of falling apart there. I mean, please be excited by all means. And it's okay if like people think that Rian Johnson is a more accomplished filmmaker than J.J. Abrams, but then say that. Like if this Star Wars trilogy was being directed by a woman or a person of color, like I might also be more excited about it. So the internet is an interesting place. Good thing we're all allowed to have our opinions.
Yeah, at least we have that.
Yes.
Well, kind of keeping on the same trend, there is a tiny little bit more Star Wars news to get through. And it also kind of it ties into some other news. Earlier this week, we learned during an earnings call with investors that Disney is gearing up to launch some pretty exciting projects as part of their forthcoming online streaming service. And specifically, they're looking to develop a few new series. One is actually going to be a Star Wars show, which will be live action. And this is a big first for the franchise because they've never had a live action Star Wars TV show. Of course, they have like Clone Wars and stuff like that on, I think it's like Disney XD and stuff like that. But we've never seen an actual like live action Star Wars show. So it sounds like they're definitely following in the footsteps of Star Trek Discovery, which I think is still doing pretty well for CBS. There are a few mm-hmm. other entities IPs that are a part of this bundle of TV series that they're developing for the streaming platform, including a TV series based on Pixar's Monsters, Inc., and a High School Musical series, which could potentially tie into the High School Musical 4 project that had been rumored for a very long time, is actually in the process of being casted right now, or was in the process of being casted. So that's something that's definitely coming down the pipeline, but it looks like they're looking to expand that universe as well, which is actually pretty smart because High School Musical remains the most successful Disney Channel original movie of all time. So it looks like Disney is bringing out the big guns to compete with Netflix, which is good because they're set to pull all of the Disney entities from Netflix beginning at the end of this year. And if they actually pull through with some of these ideas, I could see a lot of people signing up for the new streaming platform.
Yeah, this is not very surprising at all, because again, you know, this is Disney sort of, and franchises in general, like we're seeing this across the board, that they are banking on the success of their current properties and spinning them off, and it's working, people are watching it. And obviously Disney has to have something, like you said, like they have to have something to compete, and you know, you kind of say that all the streaming platforms are looking for the new Game of Thrones, but Disney is kind of in a lucky position that they already have Marvel and Star Wars, and they are kind of like on the Game of Thrones level of popularity. And like, I am, again, with same with the Rian Johnson trilogy, like I am maybe vaguely more excited for a Star Wars TV show, but that's just because I'm a TV show person more than I'm a movie person. So it's more like a medium thing, I guess. And for the rest, like we already have so many Marvel shows that I don't watch, and the High School Musical show, I think that I'm surprised that actually that hasn't happened sooner, because that seems like something that would be like a duh kind of hit success. So yeah, I'm curious. I'm curious about this. Should be fun. Will you watch the High School Musical show?
Maybe. Not sure. High School Musical is something that I look back on fondly because I thought it was just like really hokey and like amazing because it was so hokey. But I might have outgrown that a little bit. I say that and I still watch, what is it, Raven's Home and Fuller House, yeah, and stuff. Yeah. So maybe they'll pull me back in with the nostalgia. But it's a little bit different with High School Musical. So we'll see. I mean, it's more popular than ever. Honestly, there's first of all, like it's memed to an inch of its life thanks to Zac Efron's dramatic bet on it performance. But also,
Stranger Things kids like it. So that's
I think it was like last year, 2 years ago now, they celebrated their 10th anniversary of the first movie, and they had this whole cute little class reunion on the Disney Channel in between like playing the first movie, and the views for that were really great. So it's definitely still popular, and younger generations are still discovering it. So it's a really smart move.
Yeah, it is. How long do you think we have to wait for the Twilight TV show? It's gotta happen, right?
Yeah,
like I'm the sure. Collins.
Yeah.
It's got to be.
I mean, now that we have Someone's Lord of the Rings. It right now.
It's only a matter of
inevitable.
Time.
Inevitable.
Taking your bets.
Yeah,
they'll announce they're working on it in 2018. That's my prediction.
Yeah.
I'm sticking to it.
Maybe.
Anyway, we're going to move on now to what has quickly become my favorite topic to talk about. And I did it, my Patreon bonus video is also on this topic, but I know that not everyone is going to watch or listen to that one. So I am going to assume that you aren't, so that I can talk about it again. The Lord of the Rings TV show has officially been picked up. We talked about the possibility of it being developed last week, and now Amazon has booked a multi-season commitment to the Lord of the Rings TV show, as well as a potential spin-off. They've purchased the rights to some characters for a rumored $200 million, not 2 million, like I said in my video. Sorry, Meg caught me out on that one. But yeah, so this announcement is, first of all, I'm excited. I'm also kind of excited / wary by the little note in this announcement that the series will include plot lines set before the Fellowship of the Ring, meaning that we could very possibly be looking at a show that is not in fact a Lord of the Rings TV show, but is in fact a Middle Earth TV show that follows new characters, new stories, a part of the Middle Earth that has never been explored before, in the words of Lucasfilm. Or we could be looking at something that, like I posted an article on Hypeable about, that maybe ties a little bit closer into the story and characters we know. I'm sort of hoping slash predicting that the Lord of the Rings show might focus on Aragorn and Gandalf, as they are two of the players that have been up to the most before Lord of the Rings begins. And actually, there's a lot of material with them, even in the beginning of Lord of the Rings, that they kind of cut from Peter Jackson's movies. And it would be a nice, if they have the rights to those characters, and we don't even know if they do, but if they do, I think that would be a great way to tie the story into characters and elements, plot elements that are familiar not just to movie viewers, but obviously to book readers as well, and be able to expand the world a little bit, maybe include some more women, maybe focus a little bit more on the rise of Sauron, because the books and the movies are really mostly about how Sauron is defeated. But I think for a multi-season Game of Thrones-esque TV show, it might be a good idea to focus on sort of the spreading of evil and the corruption of men and the desperate battles that were going on the borders of Mordor and all that kind of stuff that makes it a little bit more gritty and real, as opposed to being like a high fantasy show about elves and dwarves and stuff, which they could also do, but I have a feeling that that's not the way they're going to go with this. So I'm excited, and I have a lot of thoughts and feelings, clearly. What do you think?
I think it's really, you know, I would have really liked to have seen, like, Fellowship be turned into a TV show, because I feel like, we talked about this last week, there's so much detail in that story that it would have been really nice to see what parts they expanded on. Mm-hmm. But I think that as far as putting forth something we've never seen before, it's very smart of them to go prequel.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, like, yeah. I think I'll be excited either way. I also confessed last week that I tried reading Tolkien when I was much younger, and I really couldn't get into it because it was a little bit too dense. The only reason I got through The Hobbit is because it was read to me. but I might have to pick these up again, because I feel like I would love them now.
You should. I was going to save this for a rainy day Howie hype, but I actually tentatively started reading the books again for the first time, actually, since the movies came out, and for the first time ever in English. So I'm very excited. I've had these for like a year and a half, and I've been waiting for the right time to pick them up. And now I'm like, well, I gotta. There are articles to write.
Yeah, I know.
But also, you know, I just want to, I want to immerse myself in this. I'm really invigorated by this.
That's so exciting. You know,
this
love
is how
that.
Some people feel about Marvel.
I know. I can count on like less than a hand the things that I'm actually invigorated by right now.
Same. So, this is good, because we might have to wait like years and years for the 100 to come back. So we have.
Well, we might have to wait years and years for the Lord of the Rings TV show. So there's plenty of time to theorize.
At this point, it'll come before.
Probably.
No, I'm just kidding. But it's just so exciting to me. And I will say, like, a part of me is a little bit disappointed that it's not actually going to be following the main story. I mean, I guess I understand why they're not doing that. But as I said last week, like, I still feel like the Peter Jackson movies can be allowed to exist as this perfect thing. And then someone else can still, oh my God, it's raining like extremely hard right now. I don't know if the microphone is going to pick it up. It's Sauron. His eye is on me. Oh no. Oh my God. I'm such a nerd. But no, like this is a part of me that still really wants to see this point of view, the story told from a different perspective and focusing on some different elements. And like, I'm never going to get my Scouring of the Shire at this rate. And I'm really upset about it, because it's like the one thing I want to see on screen. But I'm trying to stay, I'm optimistic. I think that depending on who they announce as like showrunner and stuff like that, like once the casting starts running out, I might like lose my drive a little bit for it. But
oh, I hope
for now, it's a fun thing.
I wonder how much the budget.
And if my crackpot theory about Jason Rothenberg is correct, then you know, You'll see me self-implode.
That's what I'm most curious about, honestly, is the budget for the show.
The budget? Yeah, because they already spent all their money on the rights, so.
Yeah, but well, that's probably why it's going to take a few years, because they got to build up the funds again. But to make it, like, proper
Kickstarter
retelling, you can't deny it. You can't get around the fact that there are fantasy elements to Lord of the Rings. And while some of it might take place, you know, in the woods or something, at some point you're going to have to blow the budget on something. So I'm assuming.
You have to because of the good thing is, unlike Game of Thrones, like the people of the Middle Earth inhabit far less castles and stuff. Like, obviously, if they set it at somewhere like Gondor or Rohan, like, they will have to shelve out on some sets like Game of Thrones. Like, probably really their strategy of filming will be a lot like Game of Thrones, but there's a lot of stuff that takes place in the wild. And, you know, I mean, I'm not assuming that they're actually going to go to New Zealand and just film it there again, even though that would be smart, but I think that taking a Game of Thrones strategy and filming in places like Iceland and Croatia, and they filmed on Malta as well for a while before they, like, broke the buildings and had to leave. A tour guide told me that on Malta. But in that case, like, that's another reason why I sort of have a feeling that they're going to try to set it sort of among the men, you know, because the movies, first of all, were so much about the races that it would be a way, like the elves and dwarves and stuff, that it would be a way to separate them visually. But it also, just in terms of the budget, like, it's just smart to get a bunch of, like, grimy men and women in armor, as opposed to, like, designing elves and dwarves and hobbits and all of that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to think about, for sure.
Yeah.
But,
and, like, creating Rivendell, could you imagine, like, for a TV show even?
Yeah.
I really hope they do this justice.
I feel like they know there's a lot riding on the shoulders of the people that are involved or that will be involved.
Mm.
And considering how much they just paid for it.
I just need the people developing it to love it.
Yes.
You know, I need someone like Peter Jackson to take this on who has, because that's why it worked. That's why those movies worked, because he loved it. You know, it's the only reason. And also because he's good. But, like, that's the second reason. But I will keep you guys posted. I will find ways to bring this up. Frequently, I promise.
And I will find ways to contribute, even though I have never read the original trilogy.
And maybe you will. Maybe we'll maybe do a read-along, like, on our list of stuff that we
I
have to do.
I think that's what I need. I need you to book assign club. Me chapters like homework.
Yes.
Pam reads
that's a good
Lord
idea.
Of the Rings.
After Merlin.
Yes.
That's our next project.
Every week How We Hype is like a check-in.
Yes, I would love that. Oh my gosh. I also just wanted to briefly mention, this is actually something that deserves a lot more time than I'm going to give it here. So please go and read my article about it over on Hypeable, or go to theonering.net, which is probably more authoritative a source of knowledge here. Sort of a serendipitous announcement came that Christopher Tolkien, who is J.R.R. Tolkien's third son, who is 93, has retired. So good on him. It's about time, I guess. But this does mean, because he's retired from the Tolkien estate, which has been so notoriously protective of its properties, and it was actually announced that he resigned back in August 31st. So it's probably not a coincidence that this Lord of the Rings TV show deal has gone through now, because Christopher Tolkien, you know, he had issues with the movies even. He wasn't interested in franchising the Lord of the Rings. He was very protective of his father's works. And I think now it's kind of like entering a new era where we'll see the Lord of the Rings become a lot more franchised, and we'll get the theme park, we'll get the, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's all right. Like, you know, nothing is sacred. This is just a fact that we have to learn to live with, right? So it's sad, and I'm glad that Christopher Tolkien kept it guarded for so long. But we just have to put our trust in the people that are gonna take it further, and hope that they want to honor the original source material.
All right. Well, we have a very short piece of TV news we wanted to make you guys aware of, for those of you that are big fans of The Handmaid's Tale, which, as you should be, despite the fact that it's so frightening, but it's like, it's such a great show
so
that you need to watch it and push through how horrifying this dystopian tale is. We got a little bit of news from Hulu about when we can expect new episodes of season 2 to start being released on the platform. And according to Hulu, we'll get new episodes of The Handmaid's Tale beginning in April of 2018. So not too much longer to wait, which is really exciting. They also teased that this new season will deal with, is it a spoiler anymore? Probably not. Like, we always knew this was kind of like...
I mean, it's a book.
Yeah, it's true. So in season two, viewers will get to see how Offred deals with her pregnancy, and we'll also see what lengths she goes to try to free her unborn child from the confines of this terrible place that she's kind of doomed to live in for now until she figures out how to escape. So there you go.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
I really season one. Like, despite
I loved
how,
it too.
Yeah. It's so hard to watch. I watched like six episodes in a row, and I was like horrified, but also couldn't look away.
Yeah, same. I actually somehow managed to. It was funny because I think the first half of the season is almost impossible to watch, and then in the second half, you sort of feel a little bit hopeful.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like it manages to bring some hope back, and that's I always tell people when they are like turned off by the first couple of episodes, like if they can make it through and keep watching, because it will. It will make you feel good at the end in a weird way. Not good, but you know what I mean? Like empowered, I guess, which is good. And then we have one final piece of news that we want to bring up on this week's show, which is just really briefly. It just broke right before we started recording. I just wanted to make sure we got it in here, which is that the CW fall spring schedule has been released, and we have a premiere date for Black Lightning, as well as Supergirl, Valor, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. They're all coming back in January. So we have Supergirl and Valor coming on January 1st. We have Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and Penn and Teller, Fool Us, coming on January 5th, English. We have another Supergirl on the following Monday, January 15th. Then we have The Flash beginning on January 16th. The series premiere of Black Lightning following The Flash on January 16th. We have a new episode of Riverdale on Wednesday, the 17th. We have a new episode of Dynasty, which apparently people are not fans of, in my mentions anyway, on January 17th. And we have Supernatural and Arrow coming on Thursday the 18th, and Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and Jane the Virgin coming on January 26th. So there are a couple of omissions in this lineup. First of all, Legends of Tomorrow is not present. Neither is our iZombie and a little show you may know called The 100. And that's sad. I'm sad that The 100 is not on the schedule and is likely not coming back until February at the earliest, if not March or April. So it's too soon to say anything because we don't really know. There's a bunch of speculation happening on my timeline right now about which slot is particularly The 100, but iZombie too. People are upset about iZombie. They're kind of like, I feel like based on like fandom, like iZombie and The 100 are like very popular, but in terms of the actual CW, they're like, they don't give a crap about them, it seems. It's upsetting. I think the CW treats its fans like crap right now. Like, I'm really sort of, I don't know. I feel, maybe I'm just biased because I'm, The 100 is my favorite, but I just, everything coming out of the CW right now has me very frustrated.
No, I think CW is like the worst culprit only because they should know their audience better and they should know where their audience is. You know, and their audience is online. And you're right. Like those shows that you just mentioned, they all get so much traction on Twitter, on Tumblr, on all of the places where fans live online. And it's a shame that they don't prioritize them a little bit more.
Yeah.
I give a pass to like other networks sometimes because they're like very like out of like their demographic is so much bigger. But like, yeah.
I think you have a really good point, and it's not because that it is a little bit unfair because if you look at some of the other networks, like they don't promote them that way. But I think it's because when you have Mark Pedowitz sort of coming out at every event saying, you know, we are the online network, we are tuned in, we don't care about ratings, we care about social engagement. And then you look and you're like, well, okay, but then where is it? Where is your social engagement? Like, they put a lot of stock in the fans' ability to promote the shows for them. But anyways, I guess that could be a bonus discussion all on its own. I think that like what we're seeing here is it's interesting. I'm vaguely excited for Black Lightning. I have to confess, I try all of the superhero shows and I quit them very quickly, but this one might be the one that sticks, and we'll have to keep you updated on the 100 premiere date. I know they're working on the trailer right now, and I'm optimistic that we're gonna get it maybe in December. That's where we usually get them, and that should be fun if it arrives, because it'll give us something to talk about while we wait, and then we'll see if it manages to snag a February spot or if we have to wait a little bit longer. I mean, guys, Clark waited for 6 years. We can wait a couple of more months, right? We got this. She says, smiling.
Through her tears.
Oh my gosh. It's okay. As I said, we have the Lord of the Rings show to look forward to. I'm okay. I'm fine. Moving on now to TV show of the week. Why don't you tell? Now, actually, you know what? I will go first. I'll put myself first because we're going to stick with the CW. It's a nice little transition. And I want to talk about a show that I've been catching up on, which, you know, has been recurring in my life for like a decade now, which is Supernatural. It's a show that actually listeners might not know. I used to cover I used to cover Supernatural for Hypeable, and I used to be really, really into it. I discovered it my first year of my bachelor in Wales, and my flatmates was a huge fan, and I started watching it, and I went my first ever and one of the only ever fan conventions I ever went to was for Supernatural, and I didn't watch it at the time, so I just... It was a really weird experience, but I watched the show. I loved the show. The first four seasons were incredible, and then I just kind of started falling off. It was kind of like Once Upon a Time. Like, it just kind of started repeating itself, so I've been fading in and out. I've maybe watched a couple of episodes each season, but then last season, they brought back the Winchester's mother, Mary, and I think that was a really neat thing to do and a nice way to sort of get around the thing that the Supernatural's women curse, where they can't even have women on the show because the fans get so mad that the boys have romantic interests and then they kill them all off, and then very frustrating. But now Mary, they had her back, so I gave it another shot, and then I stopped because the last season I didn't think that was very good either. But this season this season is very good, you guys. Like, we're about five or six episodes in, and I've watched it. I've steadily been watching Supernatural for the first time in like 5 years, and it's under new leadership. I believe it's Andrew Dabb, who is now running the show over there. And you can really tell that he has found a core of the show that harkens back to what Eric Kripke did in the original years. It really builds in the history. It doesn't feel forced or tacked on or formulaic. It feels really fresh. It feels the boy's characterization is really strong. Mary is currently dead, so that's a minus, but I'm assuming she's coming back eventually. They introduce a new boy who's like Castiel Jr., who is adorable. Castiel is back, and I love Castiel. He's kind of my favorite. And I'm enjoying the hell out of this. Like, if somehow you're listening to this and you too have been in and out of the Supernatural fandom, then this is a good time to catch back up. And I can only recommend it. I think it's gone on for so long now. It's kind of tread around in circles. But I think the current run, the current showrunner, the current energy that is on set and in the show and in the scripts and stuff is worth checking back in for. And if you want more Supernatural stuff, then I highly recommend Natalie's coverage of it over in Hypeable, because she picked it up from... Caitlin took it over from me. Natalie took it over from Caitlin. And Natalie has just been doing a spectacular job. She does amazing deep dives, and she really gets the show and the characters, and almost as enjoyable as the episodes themselves, her pieces are. So do check those out as well. The end.
And I just wanted to quickly say that I've been keeping up with This Is Us mostly because my mother is like obsessed with this show right now. It's such like a, oh man.
She's kind of a mom.
She is the target demographic for This Is Us. She definitely, because my mom is the best. The only reason she started watching is because she was like, is that Jessie? She calls Jess from Gilmore Girls Jessie, and I don't know why. But so that kind of like pulled her in, and she like I was very proud of her binge watching skills. She binged like the first whole season in like a week and a half. And that's pretty good for mom. So anyway, so we watch it together now, which is kind of nice because I don't get to see her throughout the day. It's like our little like weekly bonding moment or whatever. But so this last week's episode was, I mean, obviously it's not a secret that This Is Us packs a punch. I'm still not like sobbing, which makes me feel like there's something wrong with me. Clearly I'm a robot. But I just wanted to mention it was a really nice episode for Justin Hartley, whose character Kevin doesn't get to do very much, but his storyline is very compelling and it kind of comes to a head. And he had this really beautiful, heart-wrenching scene at the end of this episode. And I really hope we get to see more, because out of all of the triplets, I feel like he gets the least to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Randall's still the best, that's, like everything about.
Yeah. It sounds like the writers kind of would like to be writing the Randall show. Like, I would love to watch the Randall show. Everything I've heard, is that he's the most exciting.
He's the best. His family's the best. Like, he's had to go through so much. Like, just like the, it's so, you could do so much with his character. And there's some things that I wish they would expand on too. Like, they did this Halloween episode. It wasn't a Halloween episode, but it was an episode based on around Halloween. And that episode also dealt with adoption, like the idea of adoption and what they had to go through to adopt Randall. And in the episode, the judge that they get happens to be black, and he doesn't want to grant them custody of Randall because he thinks that he should grow up in a black family. And there are things like that, like even in the first season, like, you know, there's that whole episode at the pool where there was a black family that was like, you know, Rebecca's obviously very protective. She doesn't want people to think she's a bad mother just because her child doesn't look like everybody else, you know, in her family. And so she's a little bit defensive, but then like she makes friends with the family and like learns a little bit more about like, you know, things like, oh, you need to take him to a black barber because if not, he's going to get razor burn on the back of his head. It's just like little things like that. It's just like so interesting. And then when you think about like the idea of identity and what a kid like that must have had to go through, and there's just like so many different places you could take his character, and it's just so fun to see what they do with him. So yeah, I like many tune in for the Randall show, which is, you know, sometimes only a third if we're lucky of the whole plot. But yeah,
I guess that is kind of the downside of having a show that is so broken up, is that one part can get extremely popular and kind of overshadow everything else.
I mean, like this episode was definitely like, it was mostly Kevin and Kate. We didn't even see Kate at all, basically. So, which is kind of nice too, because even though she like obviously has, there's some interesting stuff going on with her character right now and it's about to kind of come to a head, we spent a lot of time with her in season one. So it's kind of nice to get that bit of a break.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So we're going to finish off as always with listener feedback. And we also do want to just quickly shout out that if you are a patron, then you also can leave your comments over on Patreon, of course. And if you're not, or if you are, then consider heading on over to the podcast app on iTunes, or it's not even in iTunes anymore. I'm sorry, I'm old. And giving us a 5-star rating and helping us find a bigger, broader audience. Because that always helps if you have a few minutes to do that. Or you can spread the word about us on Twitter. That would also be very helpful. Or sort of reach out to maybe some of the fandoms that we talk about a lot and get them to maybe listen if you think they might enjoy it. Anyway, that was just if you want to. You don't have to. We have some comments now. We have I was going to start with Tweet. Do you want to get the first one?
Chanel says, completely agree with Pam's take on Thor Ragnarok. It was funny and awesome time at the movies. Not surprised by Selena's take. Superhero movies just don't seem like her thing. To be fair, it's mostly Marvel. And she has her reasons, but go on.
Yeah. I have my reasons. It's so funny. She's totally right. Like, she totally called me out. But I want it to be my thing. That's why I keep watching them. I think I've said this before, that I was introduced to Marvel movies. Let's just call a spade a spade. I watched Avengers and I loved it, and I thought they were all going to be like that, and I'm still sad that they're not. Like, I'm sorry, but this is how my brain works. This is the kind of movies that I enjoy, and So I keep watching them and I keep trying to like them. And I will say that Wonder Woman was very, very much my thing. So it's not all... Pam might be right. It might just be Marvel. Although I hear Justice League is terrible, so I'm probably not going to watch that. But yeah, I'm sorry.
No, I mean, like,
I wish I liked them more than I did.
To your credit, you give it a valiant effort because you want to be surprised. You don't go to the movies because you know you're going to hate it. You go hoping that you'll love it.
No, I wouldn't do that. Yeah.
And you thought the first Guardians was pretty good too, right?
Yeah, I did. I did like the first Guardians.
So there you go.
Yes.
That's two.
Yes. And I did like the first Captain America movie as well.
There you go. See, it's not all hate.
But not as much. Yeah. Some of it is like.
Anyway, Chanel continues, OMG, all of book recommendations are awesome. Percy Jackson and Ender's Game are classics. I'd say Camp Half-Blood's whole library is a must. Wonder and Magnolia were also good. I think they fit the genre. This was in response to somebody asking if we had more recommendations for books like Ready Player One. So if you have more books to add to some of the ones that we recommended and Chanel recommended, please write in and let us know.
Yeah. The Lady Ash says, finally getting around to starting The Crown. Loving it so far. I keep pausing to compare facts to fiction. I totally did not do that. I just let it wash over me. I believe there will be a season 2 review of The Crown up on Hypeable shortly, if I can find the time.
I'm so excited. I might watch it even though I'm not reviewing it.
You should.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not that far into it yet, but
it's good.
But yeah, you should.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kelpie says, I liked Stranger Things too. I like the homage to the 80s, the production value and film techniques. I like the characters' performances and the young acting talent is stand out. So I like it, but I just don't love it and I don't feel that emotionally invested. Strange. Kelpie also said, I'll watch a TV reboot of Lord of the Rings if they invest some female characters and rename it The Lady of the Rings.
What, I can't argue with that. I mean, I keep saying in all my Lord of the Rings coverage that I want them to add more women. So yeah.
Look, I mean, if the Mists of Avalon can be a thing.
Yeah.
Then why
Do you
not?
Know that there exists a gender bent version of The Hobbit in which everyone is female?
What?
Like, not an official one, but it was, it's kind of like early fan fiction, but like semi-official.
That's really fun.
Yes. And I know that obviously it's not a real thing. It's not going to be like a movie and stuff, but I always I'm so intrigued by this concept because it changes everything. You know, if they all get to be women and this adventure they go on and stuff. And it's just, I've always wanted some incarnation of that to make its way somewhere because it's very cool that, but yeah, it does exist. So you guys can go track it down. And it's not like a fanfic. It was I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was like pre-fanfic. Someone did it. Cool. And Laura Morrow says, I have fallen so far behind on episodes. I blame grad school student teaching. Don't they know how important my podcast listening time is? Hope to catch up soon. Now, Laura sent a follow-up tweet, which I assume means that she's caught up. So yay, hey Laura. She says, I have to agree with Pam. Fuller House season 3 is not as engaging as previous seasons.
Well, surprise, surprise, Laura, because we learned earlier this week that we only saw the first half of season 3. Netflix recruited Candace Cameron Bure, who of course reprises her role as DJ Tanner in the the Full House revival, Fuller House, to let fans know that there's actually 9 more episodes and they're set to hit Netflix just in time for the holidays. So you can watch the rest of season three, part 2, beginning December 22nd on Netflix. So there you go.
All right. And we have an email as well. This is exciting.
This is the email I've been waiting for.
Yes.
Last week, Elizabeth wrote in and all it said was Thor hype. We didn't get anything else. And lucky for us, Elizabeth wrote back. And so this is what she actually meant to say. Hey, ladies, sorry about that previous email. Like you said, I was just too excited to talk about Thor Ragnarok. Now, let me tell you, this movie shook me to my core. I absolutely loved it. Chris was hilarious. Kate was amazing. And Valkyrie, what can I say about Tessa Thompson? I cannot form words. Even though I loved this movie, the mythological inaccuracies bothered me. So I feel you, Selena. Like, isn't Hela supposed to be the daughter of Loki? Isn't Fenrir also a descendant of Loki? Thanks for reading, and please talk more about the film. What was your favorite part? Give me more spoiler discussions that I so crave. Spoiler, mine was when Thor was telling the story of a spoiler about the child. Oh, she put the spoiler word again. Oh, you did. Yeah, well, Selena's saving you all. When Thor was telling the story of blank. Thanks yes. for giving me something good to listen to. That was a good, I know exactly what you're talking about, Elizabeth. That was good.
Yes. Thank you so much for writing in your actual email, although I still think the other one was very funny. Maybe we will do a, like, more in-depth Thor discussion at some point.
Yeah,
because I do think it's worth diving deeper into than what we did.
Mm-hmm. And I want to go see it again. I have to go see Justice League. And like two other things first.
I have to confess something. And again, I can't say anything because it's a spoiler. But I will say that I had a big misconception about something that happened in the film that has been cleared up now.
Really?
And that does make me like it more.
Oh, interesting.
Because I actually thought towards the end of the film, I thought that someone died who didn't die. And I was so shook. I was like, I can't believe they did that. And like, nobody seemed to care. But that's because it didn't happen. So it makes sense. But I was like, what kind of a callous monster movie is this?
That's really funny. So this is not a spoiler, but my favorite little anecdote from like the press junket tour that they did was actually this interview with Vanity Fair that Chris Hemsworth did. And in it, he revealed that it was Kevin Smith, who I'm a big fan of. Kevin Smith, of course, director, Clerks, Mallrats, Jay and Silent Bob, also does a lot of stuff for the CW because he's a really, really big fan of DC superheroes. He said, Hemsworth credits Kevin Smith, with whom he once heard bashing the Thor franchise on a podcast, for inspiring him to speak his mind to Feige. Hearing someone like Smith, who represents the fanboy world, was such a kick in the ass to change gears, Hemsworth says. We sort of had nothing to lose. People didn't expect what we did with it this time around. So I thought that was a really fun little anecdote. And it's really nice to hear that Chris Hemsworth listens to what fans have to say, even if they're bigger profile fans, because he's right. Kevin Smith is, even though he's famous, like at the end of the day, he really does embody the spirit of people that are really entrenched in fandom. And I love that he took the time to listen to that and decided that it was time to shake things up a little bit.
So that brings us to the end of the show. And we really appreciate you listening and discussing along with us. You can submit your own feedback if you have comments on anything we talked about or any upcoming news that you would like us to discuss or have anything to say about. You can do that by emailing hype@hypeable.com. You can tweet us at hypeablehype. You can leave a comment on Hypeable, which is hypable.com. And you can also go check out our Instagram at hypeablehype and our Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. Those two, probably not the best place to leave comments because we don't check them as often as the other places, but you can definitely still go and interact with us there. And if you are a patron, then our bonus discussion will dive deeper into Fantastic Beasts and why they picked that title. And you can go check out our Patreon on patreon.com/hypepodcast. You can read more about the bonus features that are available to everyone who subscribes for $2 a month. So we hope to see you over there. And otherwise, we will speak to you next week for episode 168. Have a wonderful week, everyone. My name is Selena.
And my name is Pamela.
Bye.
Bye.
3, 2, 1. Judging by my my timeline, this is like the first time that I've gotten it exactly right.
Ooh, that's exciting.
Because I'm really bad at following my own beat.
Oh, well. So you march to the beat of your own drum even when you're setting the
apparently
beat.
Apparently a different drum, because it's not my own drum. It's someone else's drum.
Even when it comes to yourself, you're defiant.
Yes.